If you'd like, you can open your Bibles to the book of 1 Samuel, the 13th chapter. And our study will begin there this afternoon. Appreciate you being with us. Several have asked me how I enjoyed the train ride yesterday. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. And we were only 15 minutes arriving in San Marcos. We would have been on time if it hadn't been for Austin. They can't get the traffic right, you know, the highways, and they can't get it right on the railroad either, it seemed like. But it was a very pleasant ride. In fact, if I had a choice and it was more reliable, I would probably do that rather than fly. I've come to not really, I used to like it, but I don't anymore. It's not any fun. We find that many times we are subjected to various tests. And these oftentimes prove of what spirit we are of, the kind of people that we are. And oftentimes these tests involve principles that show whether or not we are truly loyal to God. And while they may appear to be insignificant, sometimes the failure can result in a very serious consequence or loss. And this was the case, I think, with the first king of Israel, Saul. It was a very, as far as I'm concerned, tragic life. Actually, the background of 1 Samuel goes back to some things that Samuel had said as he was gathering the nation together to appoint Saul as the king of Israel. And in 2 Samuel, the 12th chapter, the 20th verse, Samuel said to the people, "Do not fear. You have done all this wickedness, yet do not turn aside from following the Lord, but serve the Lord with all your heart. And do not turn aside, for then you would go after empty things which cannot profit or deliver, for they are nothing. For the Lord will not forsake His people for His great name's sake, because it has pleased the Lord to make you His people. Moreover, as for me, far be it from me that I should sin against the Lord in ceasing to pray for you, but I will teach you the good and the right way. Only fear the Lord and serve Him in truth with all your heart, for consider what great things He has done for you. But if you still do wickedly, you shall be swept away, both you and your king." Well, it wasn't but a year later that King Saul begins to reveal the kind of character that he has. Israel is at war with the Philistines. According to the third verse, Jonathan had attacked a garrison of the Philistines who was in Gibeah. And as a result of that, the Philistines gather a rather large army, an army that is mentioned in the fifth verse, of 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, and people as the sand which is on the seashore in multitude innumerable. And because of that, the people begin to fear. The sixth verse begin to hide in thickets and in caves and in rocks and in holes and in pits. And so they become afraid. And as a result of that, we find that Saul waits 7 days. And Samuel doesn't arrive. And so he offers an offering. It says in verse 8, "He waited 7 days according to the time set by Samuel, but Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. So Saul said, 'Bring a burnt offering and peace offerings here to me.' And he offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. And as soon as it happened," as soon as he had finished presenting the burnt offering, "that Samuel came and Saul went out to meet him, that he might greet him." And in the 11th verse, we find certainly not the last time that Samuel is going to come face to face with King Saul. But in the 11th verse, it says that Samuel said, What have you done?" Saul said, "When I saw that the people were scattered from me, that you did not come within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered together at Michmash, then I said, 'The Philistines will come now down on me at Gilgal, and I have not made supplication to the Lord. Therefore, I felt compelled and offered a burnt offering.' And Samuel said to Saul, 'You have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which He commanded you. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought for Himself a man after His own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be commander over His people, because you have not kept the commandment or kept what the Lord commanded you." Well, there are three things that I want us to consider from this story. First, three simple lessons. First of all, that number one, there was a plain commandment that was disobeyed. Verse 8, "You shall go down before me to Gilgal," the 10th chapter in verse 8. "You shall go down before me to Gilgal, and surely I will come down to you to offer burnt offerings and make sacrifices of peace offerings. 7 days you shall wait until I come to you and show you what you should do." Very simple. Wait 7 days without me, do nothing. One of the things that I observe about Saul, and it's true, I think, sometimes the temptation that we have, is that Saul seems to react to the circumstance rather than behaving according to the commandment of God. The fact is that God's law must be the absolute and unconditional law of our life, no matter what the circumstances. In fact, we find great examples of that throughout Scripture. For example, there are some men of courage that are referred to in the book of Acts, the 4th and 5th chapter, Peter and John and the apostles. And time and again they are threatened. They have filled Jerusalem with the doctrine of the resurrection. It was a doctrine that the Sadducees absolutely hated. But time and again they are confronted, and the answer is, "Whether it is right in the sight of God, you judge. We stand before God, and we can only speak the things which we have seen and heard." Or in the 5th chapter of Acts, where Peter says, "We ought to obey God rather than men." Another example is in the book of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, standing before Nebuchadnezzar, this powerful ruler, refusing to bow before his image. And there they stand before Nebuchadnezzar and threatened to be thrown into the fiery furnace. And in essence, kind of paraphrasing, the answer is, "If God is able, He will deliver us. But if not, we will not bow down before your God." That's men of faith and character, where the law of God is the rule of their life, regardless of the circumstances. And of course, there is Daniel himself in the 6th chapter, where the decree goes forth that no one is to pray except by the prayer, to pray or to offer petitions to the Persian ruler. But three times a day, Daniel opens his window as he has always done and offers his prayer to God. I don't know where our nation's going, but I'm afraid that as a country, we're fixing to see difficult times, men and women of faith. There have been several incidents that have happened kind of on a small scale in our nation in recent history, in which people have been threatened because they had a Bible study in their home. I don't know where we're going, but I fear that the times are going to be challenging. And I hope if I'm there, or if my children are there, or if your grandchildren are there, that they will be men and women like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, with the resolve of not allowing the circumstances to rule, but rather the law of God to rule. Well, enough of that. What we have is, we have here Saul. And he understands the commandment, wait 7 days, attempt to do nothing. And thus, in the 13th chapter, we notice that the 13th chapter of verse 11, the question of Samuel is, "What have you done?" And in the 13th verse of the same chapter, "And Samuel said to Saul, 'You have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which He commanded you. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever.'" You have not kept God's commandment. I'll tell you, the only way in which we can honor Him is to keep what He says. Our worship must be a gift to God. And the only way in which it is truly a pleasing gift to God is if we do it according to His will and word. Someone says, why don't we have instruments of music in worship? I'll tell you why. Because God didn't authorize it. Not because it's our tradition or the tradition of men, because it's not authorized in the New Testament. Why is it you don't pray to Mary? Because God didn't authorize it. Why do you gather on the first day of the week, every first day of the week, to observe the memorial supper? Because this is what God wants. And it must be our resolve. Because the only way in which worship can be acceptable to God if it's done according to His will. And God has a pattern for that. He has a pattern for our life. He has a pattern for the things that we are to do collectively. And He has a pattern for our individual spiritual life and our daily walk with God. A moral pattern and a moral standard that He offers. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus. It must be according to His commandment. But Saul, you've acted foolishly. Because you have not kept the commandment of God. But God, I offered a supplication, an offering, a sacrifice to You. I came to You before because I was concerned about the Philistines. But the reality is that this was not an act of faith. Because he had not done what God had commanded. And thus, out of self-will and pride, out of presumptuous, Saul behaves foolishly. And in disobeying God, he establishes his own will as supreme, and it shows the thought of his heart. So lesson one is that a plain commandment was disobeyed. Lesson number two, Saul has a faith that failed. In verses 11 and 12, and Samuel said, what have you done? And Saul said, is it hard to see? The lettering hard to see?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to change. I'm not going to use that font anymore. Thank you. I want to know that. My apologies. Saul said, when I saw that the people were scattered from me and that you did not come within the days appointed and that the Philistines gathered together at Michmash, then I said, the Philistines will now come down on me at Gilgal, and I have not made supplication to the Lord. Therefore, I felt compelled to offer a burnt offering. What we have is, first of all, there was an innumerable army that had gathered together. 30,000, it says, chariots, 6,000 horsemen, and people as the sand innumerable, a large gathering of Philistines had gathered. Samuel has not come at the set time. The Israelites are becoming distressed, and they're hiding in caves and in thickets and in rocks and holes and in pits. Every day as he waits, he sees the hearts of Israel melting. But life often does that. Life often brings temptation, the temptation to sacrifice duty for ease. As a leader, I've learned that. Sometimes I've learned that the hard way. I hate to admit that. But a person of integrity is a person who is always the same person regardless of the confrontation or circumstance. I'll be honest, I don't like confrontation. But it's necessary as a spiritual leader. I don't like butting heads. I don't like going nose to nose. But as a spiritual leader, sometimes it becomes absolutely necessary. And so Saul looks at the circumstance. The Philistines have gathered this large army. The hearts of Israel are melting. Samuel hasn't arrived. And so he gives in. And this becomes his excuse. Again, verse 11. When I saw that the people were scattered from me, that you didn't come to me within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered together at Michmash, then I said, the Philistines will now come down on me at Gilgal, and I have not made supplication to the Lord. Therefore, I felt compelled to offer a burnt offering. But it was not according to God's commandments. You see, sometimes our temptations grow out of circumstance. It's easy to lie just to avoid the hurt. Or as I think Ed said a few weeks ago in his Genesis class, sometimes we want to help God. He'll have a number of dreams and aspirations about this church. I pray that perhaps I will be a part of those dreams. What I'm going to tell you, I must not and we must not sacrifice principle to accomplish those dreams. We must always be vigilant to make sure that what we do is according to thus saith the Lord. Otherwise, we have not succeeded at all. It must be according to God's will. And whatever the circumstance, whatever happens, whatever thing may come upon us, because we have determined to keep God's will, then so be it. May it be so. Here are several reasons why people often rationalize. Number one, they rationalize because of peer pressure. You know, this was Saul's problem. He says, "When I saw the people were scattered and you didn't come, then I offered this offering." You know, Jesus said, "He that loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me," in the 10th chapter of Matthew in the 37th verse. And in the book of Galatians chapter 1, in verse 10, Paul says, "For do I now persuade men or God? Or do I seek to please men? For if I still pleased men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ. I have a choice. Am I going to serve the Lord or am I going to serve men?" But oftentimes we are so concerned about what people think that we sacrifice principle. Sometimes it's because of a fear of consequences. Afraid of the hurt. Afraid of the persecution. Remember the parable of the sower. And in the 13th chapter of Matthew, when Jesus is explaining that parable, in Matthew chapter 13 and beginning with verse 20, "But he who received the seed on stony places, this is he who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet he has no root in himself, but endures for a little while. For when tribulation or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he stumbles." Oftentimes, because of the consequence, people will sacrifice the principle. It reminds me of another lesson altogether, but a statement that it was made by the psalmist in the 15th Psalm. In Psalm 15, he begins with two questions. "Lord, who may abide in your tabernacle, and who may dwell in your holy hill?" And then he enumerates several things. But in verse 4, he makes this observation at the latter part of verse 4. "He who swears to his own hurt and does not change." You see, people of God are people of integrity. People of God are people who will keep a promise even when it hurts. "Well, you know, she wasn't all that I was expecting her to be. Well, you know, he hasn't lived up to his bargain." The reality is that nonetheless, it is still my obligation to keep the promise and the marriage vow that I made to that individual, and to be the best wife or the best husband that I can possibly be for them. That's my job. But oftentimes, we allow the consequence to rule rather than the principle of God to rule. Better to steal than to starve, you know. Better to ignore the sin rather than to deal with the embarrassment of acknowledging it and trying to deal with it. This becomes the rationale. Sometimes we rationalize because of a lack of faith. A failure to believe. That was Saul's problem. He failed to believe that help was coming. Doubt overruled rather than faith in God. It reminds me of Peter. There was Peter, brash and wanting to walk on water. So he steps out of the boat and he makes his way toward Jesus. Then what happens? When he starts looking at the wind and seas, he begins to sink. We need to keep our minds and hearts upon Jesus. We must keep our focus upon the heavenly goal. We must not doubt, but we must continue to trust. Or it may be because of, and I left one out of the chart. This is what happens when you go on a meeting. Another reason why that we often rationalize is because of immediate advantage. That is, instant relief or the easy way out. Over in the book of Hebrews, the 11th chapter, there is a good illustration of that in Hebrews chapter 11 with regard to Moses. Here was a man of principle, a man of faith. And it says in verse 24 that he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasure in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. Rather than accepting the instant gratification of sin, he chose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God because he longed for and looked to the reward. Some people will rationalize and give in because of the instant gratification and the immediate advantage. Or some will do it out of vanity and self-will. Out of vanity and self-will. I think probably this was part of Saul's problem. I see not a good leader, but rather a lot of selfishness and presumptuous. I want to tell you something. Our work is not about us. It is about God. It is about a man who gave his life upon a cross. It is a man who sacrificed himself for us. It is not about us. It is about our Creator and Maker and the one who willingly gave his Son for us. But Saul, most likely out of self-will and vanity, gave in to the wishes of the people. The third lesson that I want you to learn is that there was a great loss. But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought for Himself a man after His own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be commander over His people because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you. You know, oftentimes we think of 1 Samuel 15 as being the time of tragedy. No, to the contrary. It was an incident that happened before then. Saul, you're going to no longer be king over Israel. God has made up His mind, and He has chosen a man after His own heart. Nothing was going to change the mind of God. Yielding, hoping perhaps to inspire the nation, Saul yielded to his own temptation, and because of that, he lost the kingdom for want of patience, out of presumption, and out of selfish ambition. And the sad part about it is that it weakened the condition of Saul, I'm firmly convinced. Because once you give in, it's easy to do it again. I wanted to talk to young people today, and most of them have gone north today. Some of you are still here. But I want you to listen to this. One lie leads to another. You know, we remember in 1 Samuel 15 when God had commanded him to go and utterly destroy the Amalekites. And the confrontation between Saul and Samuel and the question, you know, what is this that I hear in my ears? Oh, well, you know, we and the people, we spared the sheep and oxen to offer as a sacrifice to God in Gilgal. Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken in the fat of ram with the message of Samuel. But the real tragedy came before then. And what it did was, it just simply weakened Saul's condition that led to another, that led to another, that led to another. That's what happens. If you lie, it may well lead to another. One hateful deed may lead to another, or even to murder, as it did in the sense of Cain. One act of promiscuity can put you on a path of destruction. Oh, I realize God will forgive. I understand we have an advocate with the Father. I understand the joys and blessings of being a Christian, that every day I can begin anew in my relationship with God. But the reality is, be careful what you do, because what you do may come with consequences. One drink can cause you to become an alcoholic. I have family members, unfortunately, that drink, and there's some things that I just don't understand. I don't understand why a child would go to a ball game and have a beer knowing their father's an alcoholic. That one just doesn't jive with me. To me, it just seems like the most selfish thing that a person could do, knowing that your father has a problem and yet setting an example for him. Because the reality is that if you take one drink, one in seven that take the first drink become alcoholics. So, that first step simply weakens our spiritual condition. And the same is true with regard to a church. We must always be vigilant to make sure that we are doing things according to God's will. Because if we give in on one principle of worship or one principle of work, as the old timers used to say, you open the floodgates to all kinds, other kinds of things that God doesn't authorize. We must be watchful and make sure that we do only what God authorizes. We must always follow the pattern. Because one hasty action can lead to future results. In this case, it led to further sin. And ultimately, it led to Saul being rejected as the king of Israel. When I think of this time history, of course, the person that we all admire is the one that followed Saul that is mentioned by the Apostle Paul in the 13th chapter of Acts, in the 22nd verse, where Paul says, "And when he had removed him, he raised up for them David as king, to whom he gave testimony and said, I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart who will do all my will." That's the kind of person we ought to be, want to be. Men and women of faith, I want to tell you, being a Christian is not about punching a time card. It is not about checking off the checklist. Okay, well, let's see, we had a song, we had a prayer, we had the Lord's Supper, we've done this, we've done that. It's not about that. Being a Christian is about being dedicated to God. It's a 24-hour job that goes around the clock. I think it is expressed well in a song that we sing, "Sweet will of God, still fold me closer till I am wholly lost in Thee." That ought to be our sentiment. God, I want to please You. More than anything else, I want to please You in all that I do, in everything that I say, in every place I go. I want to please You. I am Your servant. I trust that's Your sentiment. Maybe you've stumbled along the way. Maybe you've been challenged in your walk. And if so, if we can do anything today to help you in that, we certainly would welcome that opportunity. We sing a song of encouragement and invitation for you and for your benefit, and we would rejoice in that opportunity to help you. We invite you to come as we stand and sing the song selected.